You know, one of the problems with open map data is people go in and change it in not good way. Change that adds features is good, but, you know, people would also, and sometimes it wasn't intentional, right? They just, you know, they do something wrong and all of a sudden you have two one-way streets like coming into each other, which is a driving problem. But sometimes it was malicious, and there were some famous cases where cities got renamed and things like that. And so that is, that's a concern.
Welcome to another edition of Cloud Unfiltered. I am your host, Michael Chenitz. And today we have Mark from the Overture Maps Foundation. Why don't you introduce yourself, Mark?
Thanks, Michael. Yeah, Mark. My name is Mark Briello, and I'm the executive director of something called the Overture Maps Foundation, which was started in December of 2022 to build open map data. So we're a nonprofit open data project, which is a little different than open code, focused really around building open map data.
That sounds really interesting. You know, first of all, why don't we talk a little bit about what the solution is? You know, is it, you know, it sounds like from what I've read about it is that it's a massive mapping solution that consists of a lot of different things, but also a lot of developer components. So maybe you can kind of just fill us in what it actually is.
Yeah. And I mean, to take a step back and kind of say why this and why data.
Yeah, even better.
Code. So maps, you know, as pretty much everyone knows, maps have become a pretty important horizontal capability, especially around mobile technologies, but also around analysis and everything else. And you know, so maps have become more valuable and important. But one of the things that's sort of a truism in maps is maps are hard. They're hard to build. And there are a couple fairly public examples of companies trying and failing. And the part that's one step deeper than that is if you look at maps and what, you know, people think, there's a software package that sits there and that does the routing or the map rendering. But that sits on a massive data pile. And that data is really hard to collect. It's always changing because the world always changes and it needs to update with the world. And for better or worse, in the last 20 years, the world just seemed to have sort of an insatiable appetite for more data. And so when you approach something like mapping, one of the things that we felt when we started it was that the way to approach it was by taking on the hard thing. And the hard thing is building these map data layers as open data. And our thought is if you can do that part, then it allows people to add other data on to enrich it and build the software. But that's stuff more people can do.
So what was the kind of bang your head against the wall moment that kind of created this solution? Because, you know, obviously there are companies like with, you know, big mapping solutions. Google comes to mind, obviously, yeah, you know, some sure. of the other companies that are out there. What made you kind of finally come together and create this solution?
You know, so it was interesting. So the company was founded in December 22 by Meta, Amazon, AWS, Microsoft, and TomTom, the Dutch mapping company. And so all big companies, but all companies that for sort of independently had come to the conclusion that the way mapping was going to go was to be built on a base of open data. And maybe the best way to explain this is if you think about a type of mapping, and most people are most familiar with roads, right? We're doing directions. There's one layer of that map data, which is the road, right? And there's a road out here, the road probably by where you are. And those don't change that much. It's fairly hard to keep them up to date and things like that, but there's a road network. What's really changed in applications that people expect is all the data that's attached to that road now. And if you think like your experience now versus 20 years ago, now you want to know which lane to get in to turn and which way to go, depending on traffic or what traffic might be at rush hour, something like that. And all that comes from additional data that's been appended or added to the basic road network. And so if you think about that structure with a base of data that's stable-ish, not 100% stable, but stable-ish, and then a bunch of value-added data that can be attached to it, then where you go in an open project to say, let's make that base open and share, because honestly, no one's differentiating themselves on it. No one's winning or losing on it. And for a variety of reasons we can talk about, it's become easier to build those in a collaborative way than in a single way. And so that was kind of the aha moment. One of the interesting things is before I did this job, I was at Meta and Facebook before that. and help put together what became Overture. So in some ways, I've been doing this job for about 10 months. And in other ways, it feels like it's been about 2.5 years. So, but the thought of that, that idea and that kind of alignment around for this industry to keep going, parts of this data have to be open and shared and we can collaborate on was pretty widely held. I mean, most people I talk to in the industry nod their head pretty quickly and kind of agree with that model.
Yeah. So, you know, is there this model, is it being consumed by some of the bigger mapping solutions that are out there?
Yeah, we're just starting to. So what we did is we launched in December 2022 with only four companies. In April, we put out our first data set, and maps are sort of thought of in layers. And so one layer is the transportation layer, so road networks. Buildings is another layer. Boundaries like city and county and state boundaries is another. Addresses is another. Places of business is another. So we started working on that, and we put out our first data set. Honestly, it was really mostly because you're trying to build a mechanism with contributions from many different companies. At the time, we were probably up to 10 companies. And it's just the coordination of the social experience of it was hard. But we learned to put it out, and then we learned to put data out on a monthly basis. And we started building these base layers. So a roads base layer, places base layer. And we built them as open data. So they're licensed under open source licenses. Anyone can use them and put them out. In April, in fact, April 16th, we just came out with our first thing where we moved it from alpha, which meant go ahead and play with it, but you're kind of at your own risk, to beta, we think the data is pretty stable. Now we should start to use it. And in fact, some of our members, Meta and Microsoft and Esri and TomTom and a number of others have already started using the data in their products.
So how do you go from, you know, conceptualizing this and creating the data structure to actually collecting this? I mean, obviously you have a good start with things like TomTom, which already has data in a certain format and probably has collected some of this, and Microsoft and some of these others. But how do you take all that then and create something that's tangible?
Yeah. Well, so you're right. We were really fortunate, not just in map data, but actually in open map data. And in open map data, there's an organization called OpenStreetMap that's been around for about 20 years. And they started 20 years ago with this idea of people mapping things that were important to them. So you map your neighborhood, I map my neighborhood, someone else maps their neighborhood. Millions of people do this, and lo and behold, you get a map of the world, which I heard about. I thought, wow, that'll never work. But 20 years later, they've actually built a pretty good map. And so that is a baseline of open map data built by that method. But then what you start to do is you start to say, what are my other sources of open map data? Because that's a good source, but there are others. So another one is, over the last 10 years, governments, whether national governments or federal or state or local governments, create map data. And increasingly, they've been making it open because they want that data to be used by people. They want, you know, if you're spending tax dollars on it, they want it to have impact. And so that's data open. That data is open. So now what you do is you bring that in, and now you have to make a judgment call, right? We have the city of Redlands as an example that comes to mind. City of Redlands has 33,000 building footprints. OpenStreetMap has 3,000. Which one's better? And so you make some judgments on, and that process is called conflation. It's the putting together of data sets. And that's a big piece of it. So that's the thing we're starting to look at now is, how do you build data through sensors and signals from your community? And so to set that up, when maps had been built, like for all of history until 12, they were largely built by surveys. So people went out and surveyed, and they, you know, wrote down or typed in what they were doing. And then that became the map. And the map is like the digital representation of the physical world. But when maps went into phones, you had a very interesting thing happen, which was you'd send map data out to people. They would use it, but they'd also send information back. And that information could be explicit, like this place you're sitting isn't there anymore. Or it could be passive, like I'm driving down a road, I've got a cell phone in my pocket that's navigating me. If 10,000 cell phones go down a road at 65 miles an hour, I can tell you a lot about that road, right? I can tell you where it is. I can tell you the lakes. I can tell you sunlight. So that ability to take signals and create it has become a big part of map building. And so if you kind of go down that way, then the best maps are the maps that have the most signals. To get the most signals, companies should collaborate and work together and basically aggregate audiences across a bunch of different applications. So that was kind of the where it came from.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's funny because you see this announcement that, like, you know, Tesla is now allowing, giving people a free month to test out their autopilot, you know, and their, you know, yeah, their nav. And, you know, being in tech, I know what this is. This is, yeah, I have new AI I want to train. The fastest way I could train this data is, yeah, to give everybody a free month because that's, yeah, going to train it for me.
Well, and to your point, I mean, I used a very simple example of GPS traces, but, yeah, but one of the big things, this is, you know, probably 10 years old or maybe more than that, is using AI on imagery. And that imagery could be from above. It could be aerial or satellite imagery, you know, where you can look down and say, that's a building, that's a road, or imagery at the street level, right? If you think about going along at street level, that doesn't just give you street view pictures. It gives you an image, which then you can segment and do detections on and start to build map data. So there's this huge growing market of basically, you know, putting pictures in one part of, into the box, doing machine learning and computer vision on it and getting map data out the other side. And that's been a really big revolution for map data building. But again, it, you know, those types of things, I think, are very hard for people to do at scale, but there again, that's where in collaboration, you can build that.
Imagine a lot of transforms, you know, because I think you have all these different types of data coming at you with different formats. And you, and the, from what I've seen in the documentation for your solution, it's a lot of YAML and like, yeah, getting that stuff into YAML and then figuring out, you know, like what does the metadata mean and defining a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. You know, one of the real problems in mapping data is, you know, this word conflation of putting data together. And the problem is that there's no really good standard in many cases of what that data looks like. There are some really good examples. And I think, you know, one example I think that's really interesting is something called GTFS. It's Global Transit F, I don't know, something F. And probably, but that is the format that all transit agencies put their schedule data in. You can imagine, like, I live in the Bay Area. The Bay Area has like 32 transit agencies. If they're all doing something different, it's a nightmare. But someone, it actually was Google, many years ago, got them to all agree to put it out in a standard format. And that just makes the receiving and integrating of that much, much easier. And so, you know, part of what we'd like to do is begin to normalize some of that so that data, because, you know, at some level, people are using different formats or different standards. And, you know, you can argue all day about which standard is better than the other. In the end, all that matters is which one's adopted, which one do people use. And I think that's one of the things. It would certainly make life immensely easier for us than putting out data. It does come out in a documented schema. And that's an important part of what we're trying to do, is have a documented schema so people know, you know, I can use this the same in the United States as in Uganda.
So you're kind of in the if you build it, they will come stage where you know, you're...
Yeah, it's yeah, I mean, I in a way. So I guess the question one would be, what gives you confidence that if you build it, they will come? And I think that there are a couple different things. And one is, it has a long history. As I said, this organization, OpenStreetMap, had been building map data that had been used. And so I think there's a lot of interest in open data as long as people can attach their other data to it, right? So if you have a road, where the road is might be open, but the traffic on it might be something you consider proprietary. So you need to be able to attach that data there. So I think that there's pretty good evidence in the market that that is an interesting piece. And then the other thing is, you know, now we're at, I think as of yesterday, 29 members. So wow, we have a lot of companies and it's an open source project. The companies work together and they're, you know, at some points we tell them, you know, your job at some level is to be selfish, build what you will need. And so the schemas and the data and the, you know, the focus on where we focus and the types of data we try and collect is really driven by the member. So hopefully it's not as blind as if you build it, they'll come. We kind of know what they're coming for, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I kind of think of, you know, like when you were talking about that proprietary data over the open data, you know, I think of things like, okay, I use EasyPass to get through my bridge tolls. You know, that's that data, they're collecting all that data, but, you know, you still have to know it's over a certain road or it's over a certain, but they're actually gleaning like speeds and things like that off of the EasyPass, you know, locators and things.
And there's a tremendous amount of that. You know, it wasn't very long ago, the only way they knew freeway speeds were sensors under the freeway, right? To drive this one, the drug or that one. But now, those EasyPasses and transit tags and things like that are all collecting speed data. And you know, mobile phones is a huge source. You know, if you think about Waze, and there were others, but Waze is one I think everyone knows.
Yeah.
Waze's great innovation was building traffic based on sensor data from their users. And, you know, you've got some privacy issues. You got to deal with those because you don't want to know, you know, your location. But in aggregate, if I have 1,000 cars going down the freeway, I can aggregate those out and come out with traffic data that is pretty privacy.
Yeah, that was great. And the other thing that they did, I think, were probably one of the first, was to mark like there's a problem on the side of the road, there's a police, there's whatever it is.
And that's actually, so one of the big things in mapping is, let's say you get these roads and let's say they're open, let's say we all agree to collaborate and we build them, and when you find out that there's a new road over here, a new subdivision, you're willing to contribute that and vice versa. Then I think where the market gets really interesting is on the data that people attach on top of that. And everyone has something different, right? But, you know, if you're in ride sharing or logistics, one of their biggest competitive advantages is knowing how to schedule their people and precisely when that person is going to walk up, deliver things, whether it's for customer service or for management. And so they're not super interested in the roads, but they're really interested in traffic, where to park, where, how to walk to the place. They're very interested in that kind of stuff. And that they would not make open, right? That is their bread and butter. That's how they get competitive advantage. And similarly, you know, Facebook is sort of interested that, you know, a certain restaurant's there, but what they really like is a list of all the restaurants, because what they're going to do is apply information to that. And that could be Instagram posts or likes or reviews or pictures or input. And so everyone gets to layer on their own data on top of the base map data.
So what happens? So I think about this, about contributing to something like this. And, you know, you kind of have the Wikipedia problem, which is, yes, I have all the information. I have all of the history and the information that you needed, but you also have to police it and say, some of this information isn't correct. So how do you go about doing that with such a massive undertaking?
So that was actually one of the big things that we tried to bring into Overture that we didn't think it existed before. In fact, you know, one of the problems with open map data is people go in and change it in not good way. Change that adds features is good, but, you know, people would also, and sometimes it wasn't intentional, right? They just, you know, they do something wrong and all of a sudden you have two one-way streets like coming into each other, which is a driving problem. But sometimes it was malicious, and there were some famous cases where cities got renamed and things like that. And so that's a concern. And so the ways people had been going with it is sort of the community open source, many eyes make shallow bugs philosophy. For a lot of the companies that we were working with, that was sort of a good start, but maybe not all you could do. And so one of the things that we started actually probably 2.5 years before Overture, when I was at Facebook, we started working with about 5 or 6 other companies to start taking open data and just running it through validation checks and just looking at things that would flag either like profanity, right? People name things profane things, or they draw bad words in land cover. I mean, people are immensely creative, or they break things. They, you know, they don't connect things. And so we, with about 5 other companies, developed about 60 checks to take the open data, put it through, and that would flag quality checks. And I think one of the things for open map data to really work, you've got to give people that sense of confidence that it's good. I mean, to give you another example, you know, if you think of places data and you and I run competing restaurants, you don't want me being able to edit your restaurant entry, right? I'd move it over to the dump or something like that. You might do the same to me. So you don't want to do that. So you want to start thinking through, how are you going to get authoritative data, or how are you at least going to look at signals statistically to say that restaurant's still there and hasn't been moved? So
I would imagine that AI is going to take place, you know, give you some benefit here in terms of like validating and putting some, at least through some checks and things like that, that says, you know, so somebody changes something and they can go out and check, okay, I have, with all this data, I see that there's a 99% chance that this is correct or something like that.
Yeah. And AI has been actually a huge part of mapping for quite a while. But one of the biggest applications has been in sort of computer vision detection through imagery. So I have aerial imagery, and there's been really some amazing work on detecting, you know, that's a roof, that's a road, you know, whatever it is. But the thing that you're talking about, I think the thing that is really kind of becoming interesting now is use of large language models, where I can start to get access to other data sets and, you know, text data sets and unstructured data sets and start to do it. And I mean, that is, I think, fairly new, but, you know, one of the advantages of some of the members we have is we have some members who are very good at large language models. And they're starting, and one of the ways we'd like to go is where, as those technologies evolve, we're able to use that technology either to create new data or to show us where the data's wrong. Right now, it's kind of expensive. It works, and it works well, but it would be very hard to do all the data in the world. The data is huge. But if you have particularly problematic cases, that's, in today's market, that's where it goes, and I'm sure that'll broaden out.
Yeah, and I'd imagine that, you know, the same problem with that you're kind of solving with mapping, you almost need for IoT and some other things. I mean, you have things like MQTT and things like that, but you need to kind of standardize the language that you're going to send this stuff over.
Yeah.
Because you know, at some point, I envision within probably the next even 5 to 10 years, you're going to have all this data of you know, gathering on the roads and gathering on the, you know, because vision isn't just going to be in electric cars, you know, it's going to be in everything coming up. So computer vision will be pretty much everywhere.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because when I got into this business, you know, almost 20 years ago. And back then there were two companies made proprietary map data. It was highly, highly guarded, highly prized. And it was made mainly by surveying. I mean, people would go out and look, and, you know, you'd drive and I'd have my computer and we'd like go like this. And we'd survey the world. And so the best maps belong to the companies with the biggest survey teams. That was kind of how it is. But if you kind of fast forward to now, where a lot of this data is going to be created by sensors coming back. And we see this even today. I mean, the best traffic data comes from the systems with the most cars on the end of it, who can tell you, like, with great granularity, what is the traffic doing? And, you know, and that's where I think you see things where, like, an accident happens, and within minutes, your map is reflecting that traffic pattern. So, you know, if you think about that, if you're a car manufacturer, would you want that traffic data from only your brand of cars, or is it maybe better to have all the cars in there, or an open data set? And I think, you know, it's funny. I mean, as you talk to people about it, everyone gets where this is going. And I think that's been one of the benefits we've had. Getting on the path to get where you're going can be hard because people have to collaborate and do things like that. So that's, but everyone kind of agrees on where the thing is going.
So if we step back a little bit and somebody wants to consume this data, first of all, how would they go about doing it? Is there like a developer SDK? How do they consume?
Yeah. So we only make data. So we're not making the software, and the software would be things that render maps or things like that. So we make the data. We put it in the cloud in a couple different places. We put it, you might guess, Amazon and Microsoft are founding partners. But we're also looking at putting it in a number of other environments. We're actually working on a couple other cloud environments where we'll put it. So the data is free. It's under open source licenses, so anyone can download it. We do put it in a cloud native format called GeoParquet. That was a little different, and we has not been unanimously welcome in the mapping community. I mean,
maybe just step back and explain what that is for 2 seconds to people that don't know.
So GeoParquet is a cloud native format that allows you to store your data in the cloud and then go through in a partition way and kind of look for the data you want, query it, understand what's there, and then download the data you want, gotcha. As opposed to, you know, a big blue button that says download, and then, you know, this is not small data. You know, terabyte. It can be like 200 gigabytes of data and stuff. And so when we started this, most of the industry had sort of, you hit a button and you download a big file, and then you take that and put it into your software. We kind of philosophically wanted to go with cloud native technologies because we felt that the data was just getting to the point where it was so big that it was going to break the other model. It just wasn't going to be what was there. And the second thing is our target market is really application developers who are building maps applications. And the good news there is if you assume that's your target market, you can also make some assumptions that, you know, going and accessing data out of Athena, out of AWS is something they know how to do. And we've been pretty happy with that. Although, like I say, I think there are people who would like to just be able to download the data and stick it in the software. And so we're looking at tools to accommodate all this. But we do think the cloud data format is really the way it's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, just coming from that background, I mean, I would much rather consume smaller bits and just get the pieces that I need than download everything. So, you know, I definitely see the benefit to that. What were some of the objections to using that? It's just not the way they've done it in the past.
I think that's right. And, you know, you need to be able to write some code, and we're doing some things to make that a little easier. But, you know, in the past it was literally hit download and it just downloaded. And you know, it was interesting because it was for our team, we had a number of people who just felt very strongly that this is the way it was going to go, and felt even more strongly that if you went the old way, it was going to break and not too far in the future. And so, so we did that. But the objection was, you know, it's a different way of doing it. It's a different way of accessing data. And, I'd say, honestly, we took a bit of a short-term hit. You know, anytime you change something, you take a bit of a short-term hit. But we're starting to see already in the community, people starting to develop better and better tooling to do that. And so, you know, the wonderful thing about open source is they don't have to ask my permission, they just go do it. And you know, we've already seen a lot of development work on that, which is great. So I super convinced it's the right path. A little painful for some people in the short term.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, a lot of computing is happening at the edge. Edge means that you have less resources. And when you have less resources, you need to consume things a little bit smaller and thinner and then process it. So, I mean, I think that was smart. I would have done, you know, if I had that choice, I would have done the same thing.
You know, and the other thing that's happening with map data, if you think back, you know, I'm sure neither of us remember paper maps, we're much too young for that, but if you think back to paper maps, like when was a map data created versus when it was consumed? I mean, years?
I don't know how we got anywhere back then.
Yeah. But I mean, you had your maps there and you pulled them out. But I mean the map data creation and the map data consumption could be a decade apart, right? But now, you know, you think about like what the appetite of the public is. Like if the world changes, users want to know about it like that. And, you know, just had the Key Bridge in Baltimore break.
Yeah. Well,
in your paper map, right, you'd be out of luck for the next 10 years, right, until that fixed. But in digital maps, and people have gotten more sensitive to that, that gets fixed in minutes. I mean, that gets fixed very, very quickly. And I think that's what people start to expect, right? If you had gone the next day and hadn't watched news or heading over the Francis Scott Key Bridge and it was there, you'd be like kind of mad at your navigation app. And so that's what people expect. And so I think there again, it comes to, you don't just download the data once, you download it like over and over.
I won't order from a place if I can't order on my phone to get a restaurant these days. You know, if I have to call somebody, that's way too much.
You know, it's really amazing. And, you know, I try not to sound like the old cranky guy, but it hasn't been that long, right? I mean, it hasn't been that long that these things were true. But what we've seen recently, if you just think in the last 5-10 years, like the apps are getting better and better. And whether it's routing or, you know, with real-time traffic and think how that's going to go to autonomous vehicles or local search, you know, it's like, oh, why'd you tell me about that place? That place is closed. How come you didn't know it's closed? How come you didn't know it didn't have this side? You know, it's like people are getting very, as the data gets better, the apps get better. And the part that's always amazing to me is people's expectations, just like they go, like it was right up to the top of what it can do, and then ask for more. And so I think that, you know, that puts more, if you think what that does, it says, okay, so then our data needs to be super interactive. We need this constant flywheel of sending you data and assessing how it was used to see if it was still good. And I think if you kind of look at where Map's going, that's where it's headed.
So it made me think though, I mean, you guys are creating this massive database and have all this data, but what if somebody wanted to use this kind of solution privately at Open too? Could they use the same format and create their own little repository somewhere of like, maybe their internal Wi-Fi, maybe their internal building maps, maybe their internal, you know?
What we've developed is we think of it in a couple of different parts. One part is the data. So that would be the roads or the addresses. All that data is put in a schema. And so we documented the schema, and that actually has been a lot of work over the last year. The engineers get mad if I say we're at the end of that, but we've done a lot of work, but it's all put in a schema. And so that is all open source license. So if someone wanted to take that and build, I don't know, something else privately with our schema, they could. I mean, that's the great thing about open source is that's fine. And then the other part that's really important is we have this thing called the Global Entity Reference System of NERS, which is not a great acronym. But what that is, if you think about a map, if each entity in that map, so a road segment or a building or an address or an administrative boundary like a city, if that has an identifier, a unique identifier that says that thing is this identifier, now if I want to add data to that, whether it's reviews or drop-off points or flood inspection reports or whatever, I can pretty quickly add it to that unique identifier. So that's the other thing we're really pushing, is that idea of an entity identifier to attach data to the base maps. And that could be open data or not open data. Probably in most cases, not open data.
And what about, I mean, is that associated to things like GPS location and then some kind of metadata? Is that how it works?
It is in a way, but it's really associated to the entity. And so the problem we're trying to get is, let's say I have a restaurant, I'm doing a places database. And let's say I go over here and I get menus, and I go over there and I get reviews, and I go over there and I get ratings, and I go over here and get pictures. Very often what they'll do is those pictures will be associated with that restaurant by the name and address. So now I've got to take that address, I put it into a geocoder, I get a lat long. Now I start putting them, but what if like one's here and one's here? Are those the same or are they different? And so the problem is that conflation, the word people use for it, is that conflation of data is hard and imprecise. And I mean, it's just like, if you talk to anyone mapping, don't like talking about it. And so that's one of the things we're trying to change, is make a open worldwide and entity-based standard. So in answer to your question, it does have a component of it that's tied to location, but it's not, we're not just, the problem with GPS is like, take it out to enough decimals, no two GPS or lat longs are the same. So now you have to decide, are those the same thing or are there something different?
So we're getting towards the end here. Any final words of wisdom or what you'd like people to do? Can they contribute somehow? How can they?
You know, yeah. So we've just come out with our beta release, and that, you know, what that says is we think this is getting pretty close. Our main sponsors, a lot of our members are starting to adopt it. We hope others will too. There are a couple ways to participate. And one is, if people have data that they want to make open to help update the base layers, that is what the organization will do. But the other part gets to this thing I just mentioned, which is associating data to the base layer. Because That's actually any sort of spatial data. And I think a lot of people have data. And the benefit of associating your data to our base layers is anyone who uses those base layers can now use your data. And you know, I think at the end of the day, this is really about getting data used. So.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. This has been a really, really interesting one. And you know what? I've actually been way more interested to hear about what, you know, what's going on in this area than I thought I would initially. And it's really interesting.
Maps are fun. I mean, all kidding aside, I mean, the nice thing about maps is everyone deals with them, right? And they may not like them, but everyone kind of deals with them. So everyone, at some level, understands what you're talking about on these issues.
Well, thanks again for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Great. Thank you very much, Mike.